Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 14, The Pregnancy of Diti in the Evening, text number 42. Diti uvacha.
Diti uvacha.
Param Bhagavata Sakshad. Suna Bhutara Bahuna. Asasi Putrayo Mayam.
Asasi Putrayo Mayam.
Makudhat Brahmanat Prabho.
Makudhat Brahmanat Prabho.
Diti Uvacha.
Diti Uvacha.
Vadham. Diti said, "It is very good that my sons will be magnanimously killed by the arms of the Personality of Godhead with his Sudarshan weapon. O my husband, may they never be killed by the wrath of the Brahmana devotees." Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. When Diti heard from her husband that the great souls would be angered by the activities of her sons, she was very anxious. She thought that her sons might be killed by the wrath of the Brahmanas. The Lord does not appear when the Brahmanas become angry at someone, because the wrath of a Brahmana is sufficient in itself. He certainly appears, however, when his devotee simply becomes sorry. A devotee of the Lord never prays to the Lord to appear for the sake of the troubles the miscreants cause for him, and he never bothers him by asking for protection. Rather, the Lord is anxious to give protection to the devotees. Diti knew well that the killing of her sons by the Lord would also be his mercy, and therefore she says that the will and arms of the Lord are magnanimous. If someone is killed by the will of the Lord and is thus fortunate enough to see the arms of the Lord, that is sufficient for his liberation. Such good fortune is not achieved even by the great sages. Diti uvacha. Vadham Bhagavata Sakshat Sunabhudhara Bahuna Asase Putraya Mayam Makudat Brahmanat Prabho. Diti said, "It is very good that my sons will be magnanimously killed by the arms of the Personality of Godhead with his Sudarshan weapon. By my husband, may they never be killed by the wrath of the Brahmana devotees." Om Ekam Jivanandisha Jivanandisha Chakshuram Militantina Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So here, Srila Prabhupada points out in the purport that a devotee of the Lord he doesn't pray to the Lord to appear for the sake of the troubles the miscreants cause him, and he never bothers him by asking for protection. So the devotees, the Vaishnavas, and of course, when we say Vaishnavas, that indicates those who worship the Supreme Lord, Vishnu Tattva, Lord Vishnu, Narayan, Krishna, Ramchandra, various Vishnu Tattva manifestations. They worship that one Supreme Lord with exclusive devotion in pure devotional service, not praying for anything material. There are many people who are also included, or they include themselves in as Vaishnavas, but in fact they may see Vishnu or Krishna on the same level as the demigods, as one of the demigods. They count Lord Vishnu as one of the many demigods. They don't distinguish Vishnu as being anything more than one of the demigods. But they also count themselves as Vaishnavas, but technically, because they're offering worship to Vishnu, but in the proper sense of Vaishnavism, they're not actually Vaishnavas, they're demigod worshippers who have no proper understanding of Vaishnavism. And of course, it is sometimes, generally, it's very hard for people to identify the difference between actual Vaishnavas who are transcendental on the transcendental platform, or attaining gradual progress on that platform, and those who are actually on the material platform. They call themselves Vaishnavas, but actually they're pretty much materialists. So very hard for people to distinguish the two. Here, one of the distinguishing features is mentioned there, that the actual Vaishnavas, they're not asking, they don't bother the Lord to ask him for any personal, they don't pray to him for some personal benefit, even for protection. Whereas those who are worshippers of the demigods, who may include Vishnu as one of the demigods, they are constantly asking the Lord for some personal material benefit, even up to the point of liberation. So, the devotees, they have a, they don't have an enjoying mood. That is the difference. The actual Vaishnavas do not see themselves as an enjoyer of the material world, but they see themselves as a spirit soul who may have had that false conception, has fallen into the material world, has taken birth in one of the myriad sort of wombs of 8,400,000 different species of life, but the Vaishnavas taking birth in the human form of life, they understand that I am not the enjoyer of this material world, and somehow or another let me undergo the suffering I am due to the great offence of turning my back on the Supreme Lord, giving up that surrendered loving position, and coming to the material world. So the devotees actually consider themselves somewhat an offender who deserve to be punished or undergo all sorts of difficulty. In fact, the devotees may consider that if they live a really difficult life, that is better for them, because it may help them to, once again, develop that proper service attitude, because sometimes it is the great difficulties that we undergo in this material world that sort of snap us out of the illusion that we are, the Lord or the enjoyer of the material world. The tendency is the material energy is very, very powerful. We go along in, thinking, oh, I am enjoying, I've got the nice education, I get the nice job, and now I've got a nice family, building a nice big home, beautiful garden, everything is doing well, I'm enjoying, very nice. So that's the illusory nature of the material energy, and completely forgetting one important fact, and that is that death is just about to, and time is just about to smash everything to pieces. Within a second, everything finished. So that little detail, we tend to forget, and that's the nature of the material energy. Very, very powerful. If we had it in the back of our mind that any moment, time will come, everything I'm achieving, my education, strong body, this, that and the other, nice family, everything within a second, all smashed to pieces, how much effort would you go to? But under the influence of material energy, huge endeavour. Some people are prepared to risk going to jail, committing all sorts of crimes and getting severely punished, but their endeavour to, I will achieve that goal of setting myself as enjoyer. Sometimes the soul of those who are, as Prabhupada says, not all souls pray to the Lord within the womb, but sometimes those who have that Vaishnava mentality, they pray, maybe I should stay in the womb where I'm suffering, because it's helping me to remember and to pray properly. As soon as I come out of the womb, the material energy will just, swallow me up in illusion. So maybe better I stay here and just keep praying to the Lord and let Him deliver. And therefore we see that Sukadeva Goswami, who spoke the Bhagavad Gita, I think he was 16, before he actually came out of the womb, because he understood that the nature, the illusory potency, the material nature. So sometimes devotees, they're willing to undergo what is allotted to them by their destiny in order to keep themselves in that proper mood that I am not the enjoyer of this material world. I don't want to be caught up in that mire, and let me always remain fixed up in the service of the Lord. So, whereas those, many who also call themselves Vaishnavas, they don't have that mood. They're constantly praying for some different benedictions. Here it says, actually, the devotees, they don't bother the Lord, they never pray to the Lord to appear for the sake of the troubles the miscreants cause him. Still, we see in our movement that, as a regular daily function, we worship Lord Narasimha. So, devotees do pray for the protection from the Lord to maintain them in their devotional service. But, if there are some obstacles that may throw them off the path of devotional service, some obstacles within or without, for the benefit of the Lord's service. And also, the devotees are also praying for the... they know that in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna teaches that one who is... there will never be one more dear to me than one who teaches the message of the Gita to others. That person is the most dear. The devotees understand Krishna wants the teachings of the Gita spread all over the world. And of course, we know that Krishna appeared in Kali Yuga as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began the Sankirtan movement. That people become purified by chanting the holy names of the Lord, taking prasadam, and in that way they can understand and develop a taste for the Bhagavad Gita and the Srimad Bhagavatam, and that that should be spread all over the world. Sometimes devotees pray that there are so many obstacles. The devotees are trying to maintain themselves in their devotional attitude, and in this world, the nature of people, especially in Kali Yuga, is there's so much opposition that it's very hard for the the Lord's movement, the Bhagavad Gita, to be distributed, to be taught freely. And so the devotees may pray for Lord Narasimhadev on behalf of the Lord's mission, or for the protection of other great Vaishnavas. You see that in 500 years ago, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had appeared, and when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appeared, because at that stage he was known as Visvambara, when he returned from Gaya, he began to manifest symptoms of love of God to a degree that personalities such as Advaita Acharya, Srivas Pandit, they could recognize, is this possibly the Supreme Lord? These ecstatic symptoms a manifesting according to the scriptures. But when a personality experiences such ecstatic symptoms upon hearing the names of Krishna or anything related to Krishna, they understood this could be the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, of course, he was instigating personalities like Srivastakur and so many other associates to have kirtan, and they were having a huge kirtan way into the middle of the night, practically until dawn, and all the residents of Navadvip were becoming extremely angry, and some of them were saying, let us destroy the house of Srivas Pandit because they're doing this chanting there. Let's throw his entire house into the Ganges. Let's destroy them. Let's throw them out. Let's punish them all like that. And so they began, even amongst the Brahmin community, who were probably worse than anyone, and they began to agitate for the Muslim government to come and punish them severely with their soldiers. So of course, we know that the Muslim people in general, they're known for their very strict and severe punishments. They don't tend to muck around. That's that's their culture. Somehow they perceive it as part of the scripture. I know I was watching a documentary about Istanbul, which at one stage has been ruled by the Christians, at one stage by the Muslims, back to the Christians. But the Ottoman Empire, the last one, I think they're still going. They have this understanding from their scriptures that what they do is they have many sons, many wives, they select, the one who they will hand over the whole empire, vast empire, to. And from their scriptures, they understand that they have the right to kill all the other sons. But in the scriptures, it says you should not shed the blood of the members of the royal family like that. which we would understand, don't kill them. Right? If someone says, don't shed his blood, you think, oh, I've been not, you know, there's a very exceptional, special human being meant for a great purpose, for the benefit of, you know, people. Don't shed their blood. What they do, they take it in a different way that, okay, how do you kill someone without shedding their blood? So what they do is they strangle them to death, you know, the children. Usually in mass, and in front of, like in the court, you know, where all the, you know, the family members, different people will come and they'll just watch them, they'll just kill, you know, all the same. Very, very, you know, they have a reputation, and from their understanding, these things are just part of scripture. We're allowed to do that. So when Srivas Pandit understood that all the residents of Navadvip had, complained to the Muslim ruler, and already on their way were two boatloads of soldiers coming to punish. So they were terrified. So Srivas Pandit went into his home and began praying to Lord Narasimhadeva. But they were fearful for the path of devotion service. You know, he was praying. It's not so much, of course, there's natural fear, but they were concerned that the Lord's mission would be destroyed by, you know, atheistic, demoniac personalities. And then, of course, everyone will go to hell like that. So they prayed to Lord, he prayed to Lord Narasimha. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he went to the home of Srivas. That Lord that you're praying for, I am He. I am that Lord. Like that. And of course, around that time, so He revealed that He was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Up until that point, they weren't quite sure. but you see there, Srivas Pandit Kaur, he's praying to Lord Narasimhadeva for the protection of the devotees and the Lord's mission. And that Lord, Lord Narasimhadeva, personally came to his house to see how, you know, the nature of that Supreme Personality of Godhead. He personally came to his house. You're praying to me, I've come to your home. Like that. So, you know, do not fear. As it describes here, that as Prabhupada says, he certainly appears, however, when his devotee simply becomes sorry. It says, the Lord is anxious to give protection to the devotees. So that's the nature of Krishna. Because we see that in Kali Yuga, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is none other than Krishna, who is none other than Lord Varaha, he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, he appeared on the prayers of his devotees like Advaita Acharya, Srivas Pandit, they pray to the Lord for the deliverance, for the protection of all the other living entities within this. So Vaishnavas are like that. They pray for others' protection. And praying for others' protection means that the devotees want the living entity to get the mercy of Krishna. So when a devotee prays for the protection of others, that's what they're praying for. It's like they're not necessarily praying for other material things, you know, protect my this, my that, my that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Lord Nityananda, they once went to the house of one sannyasi, and that sannyasi, he was a fallen sannyasi. He was a married sannyasi. He may have had a couple of wives, I think. Nicely in his home. Anyway, they, you know, Lord Nityananda and Lord Chaitanya, they understood, well, we've come to deliver the fallen, so, you know, here's this fallen sannyasi, we'll go and spend some time at his home. And, anyway, that sannyasi, let's hope I get, there's a couple of different stories, hope I don't mix them up. Anyway, he was calling for wine. He said to Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, shall I bring a little bit of happiness? And, you know, Lord Nityananda saying to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I think he's saying he's going to bring some wine. And then again, yeah, shall I bring some happiness? Anyway, I think it was another, I'll come back. I think it was another sannyasi. That sannyasi offered Chaitanya Mahaprabhu his blessings. And, you know, he blessed him to have a nice home and wealth and great learning and good health. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, what sort of blessing is that? I don't want any of that. You know, a blessing means may you have Krishna's mercy. That's a blessing. You give me that blessing. That's protection. Protection from the material energy. And may you have Krishna's mercy means may you develop, may Krishna bestow upon you within your heart love of God. Because if that love, if you become a devotee of the Lord will come to your home. It's like he did with Sri Vas Pandit. You know, one doesn't have to, you know, if the Lord is coming to your home, what need is there to pray for anything else? It's like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he used to personally go and visit Haridas Thakur. And Sanatan Goswami, they were not allowed into the temple to go and worship Lord Jagannath because Haridas Thakur was considered to be Muslim. So, you know, the Brahmanas being very proud and not understanding the scriptures, they would not allow. You know, even Sanatan Goswami was actually born in a Brahmana family, but because he associated with non-Hindus, therefore he was considered fallen. They wouldn't allow them. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu personally came to visit them daily. So if one gets that blessing to become a devotee of the Lord, to have that, you know, somewhere within the heart, instead of being the enjoyer, lusting over the material world, greedy, angry, envious of others, to have that love for the Supreme Lord, then the Lord becomes anxious to follow that devotee and look after that devotee personally. You know? So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you know, that's a blessing. You give me that blessing. Like that. So the devotees, you know, when they pray to Lord Narasimhadev, just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he also prayed to Lord Narasimhadev. And you know, he would pray, you know, when will I, you know, roll on the ground in transcendental ecstasy, you know, my heart flooding over with pure devotional love for the Supreme Lord, like that. So, you know, he's praying to Lord Narasimhadev to, you know, whatever the obstacles there are on you know, externally or internally, that becomes taken away. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he is Krishna himself. The devotees, they prayed for the protection of all living entities in this Kali Yuga, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came in answer of that prayer to deliver all the fallen souls, even the most fallen souls. That's why even when he went to the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he went to Kasi, which is also known as Kasi, and it's got another name, Kasi these days, modern name. Was it?
Varanasi.
Yeah, so all the impersonal state. Yeah, Varanasi. And there were all these, Prakrishananda, these great Paka sannyasis. They were absolutely faultless in the execution of sannyas duties. So they're the perfection of Brahminical culture. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu went there because he understood that they were envious and critical of his devotees also. He left without even letting them see him. Because later, on the prayer of one of his devotees, he came back to deliver them. But he wouldn't give them his, he wouldn't even let them see him. But he went to the house of the sannyasi, who was offering them wine, because although he was completely fallen, he wasn't envious of the Lord, nor was he envious of the devotees. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said that I will deliver anyone, even the most fallen person, no matter how sinful that person is, and therefore we see with Jagai and Madai. Jagai and Madai were so sinful. They killed hundreds of brahmanas. They killed so many cows. They did everything. We don't want to talk about it. There's descriptions that Chitragupta, who records the various sinful activities, and he has so many assistants. They were like, we can't keep up. There's just so many sinful activities. It was just an impossible task just to record them. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu delivered. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, the only person I cannot deliver is one who offends my devotee. That person, I cannot deliver that. I will not deliver that person. And to demonstrate that, and that's what we see here, even Diti, she says, may they never be killed by the wrath of Brahma, the devotees. Be very careful that the wrath of Brahma, the devotees, very, very, one never wants to be in that position. In order to demonstrate that, one time all the devotees, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had revealed that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead, they were all asking different benedictions, may you benedict this devotee like that, may you benedict this devotee. And then some of them asked, may you benedict Mother Yashoda with pure love of God. Because at that stage, we know that Mother Yashoda is an eternal associate of the Lord. She's a Nitya Siddha. There's no question of not having love of God. But in these earlier stages of his pastimes, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was not exhibiting, originally that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And a lot of devotees, a lot of people in the towns anyway, and even Mother Yashoda, because people were telling her, she was saying, what is wrong with my son? He's just doing all these crazy things like that, because he was having transcendental ecstatic symptoms. And they were saying, I think he's got some wind disorder, the life is, and perhaps he may be a little crazy, and perhaps you might want to tie his feet up just in case, he becomes violent and, starts attacking. So they were advising it like that. So, they prayed for Mother Yashoda when they understood he was the Supreme Person. But may she have pure. He said, I cannot give that. I cannot give, although she is my mother, I cannot give her my bhakti. And the devotees were very, very, you know, what has she done? Of course, it was revealed that Advaita Acharya used to associate with her, with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's elder brother, Vishwarupa. And through that association, Vishwarupa eventually took sannyas and left. So, and then what happened was that when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu began to manifest his Sankirtan pastimes as the Supreme Lord, Advaita Acharya became much more intimately associated, and she's thinking now, you know, I've lost one son through Advaita, I'm going to lose another son. And she said, people call him Advaita, but they should have called him Dvaita, because he is, you know, dualistic. He has this duplicity. His purpose is to, you know, cause me trouble, taking away my sons. So, of course, not really an offence. Not an offence at all. You know, it's just natural for a mother to, you know, be a little disturbed. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took the opportunity that I want to show the world that even if my mother, who he dearly loved, if there's even the slight Vaishnava apparatus, I will not allow them to attain love of God. And Chaitanya. So, therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that there was an arrangement where that they asked, well, you know, what does one have to do? And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, in the case of Devasa Muni, we learned that there is only one way, no other way. There's only one way to rectify Vaishnava apparatus. The person has to go to that person and rectify to that person that they have committed that offence to. So Mother Yashoda, she came to you know, all the devotees, and Mother Yashoda came to Advaita Acharya, and Advaita Acharya was told, you have to, Mother Yashoda has come here to, you know, get relief from the offence she has caused you. And of course, Advaita Acharya, he was mortified. You know, Mother Yashoda, she's this worshipable personality, the mother of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he started glorifying Mother Yashoda, you know, just, and when he did that, he just went into a trance of, and he just went unconscious. And while he was like that, Mother Yashoda took the opportunity to, you know, take the dust of his lotus feet and to pray for forgiveness, because she knew that he wouldn't do it while he was conscious. What's that? Yeah, Mother Sachi, thank you. Yeah, I'm saying Yashoda. So, then, when Sachi, when she took the dust of his lotus feet, she became... then Lord Chaitanya thought, yes, all apparatus gone. And she became overwhelmed in ecstatic love. And she also, you know, went unconscious. So, you know, both of them, they both caused each other to experience ecstatic love in pure devotional service. Apparent Vaishnava apparatus was gone. And then, of course, all the devotees chant Hare Krishna. But, you know, that's from the mouth of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Advaita Acharya also, you know, he said a similar thing, and so did Lord Nityananda, that, you know, they will offer benedictions to every living entity, no matter how fallen, and help them to attain the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But if, you know, if they're somehow, they are, you know, critical or, you know, envious or apparatus to the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they will not give Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he said himself, if someone worships me and offends my devotee, it's like massaging my feet with one hand and with the other hand bashing me on the head with a stick. He said, I will not accept that massage. And so you imagine someone comes up and says, nice massage, yeah, I'll give you a massage. Oh, very nice, yeah, massaging the feet. And then bang, bang, bang on the head. The next day they come up, Time for your massage? No, that's okay. Yeah, I'll go elsewhere. That is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He'll not accept that. So, as aspiring devotees, we can see here that the devotees of the Lord are so dear to the Lord that they don't have to ask anything, and the Lord is anxious. And therefore, if a devotee thinks, I wish that person would become Krishna conscious. I really wish that person could become a nice devotee. Okay? Then the Lord thinks, I will not leave my devotee in anxiety, and I will make that person Krishna conscious. Okay? So, and that is the secret of success. Yasya Prasada, Bhagavad Prasada. If we can take shelter of the devotees of the Lord, we are protected from, and on the path of devotional service. And if we can become nice devotees with some, little bit of love. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is described in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Bhagavat, that, and even in the 10th canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, if we can develop the minutest fraction of the love of the Brajavasis for Krishna, you can go back to the spiritual world. You don't have to become, great. If you can just develop the minutest fraction, that's it in the Krishna, of the love that those Brajavasis have, you are elevated, you become elevated to go back to Krishna Lokanatha. So, if we can take shelter of the Vaishnavas, being very careful of Vaishnava Parad, one will achieve that. Because you please the Vaishnavas, and then the Lord is thinking, my devotee is praying for their benefit. The Lord is always looking for an opportunity to serve the devotee, and the devotee will not allow that. He will never allow that position. So you see, with Advaita Acharya, he becomes so angry at the Lord. You know, what had happened to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would be swooning with devotional ecstasy, and when he'd wake up, he'd be thinking, oh, what have I done? What have I done? I've done some terrible thing while I've been in some crazy trance. I've gone a little bit mad. So he would then, to make his life auspicious, he would, take to the feet of Advaita Acharya and worship his feet and take the dust of his feet, protect me. I don't know what's happening. Advaita Acharya is becoming furious. I'm trying to be his servant and he keeps being my servant. So he thought, I will fix that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So he began preaching Mayavad philosophy. I know how angry he becomes. So Advaita Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he went to his house and he asked him a question. Advaita talked this Mayavad, and saw one, and some Mayavad philosophy. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu dragged him off his sana, dragged him outside and started beating him. And Sita, Advaita Acharya's wife, she came out, stop, you'll kill him, you're just an old man like that. And, Advaita, he became, ecstatic. Now you have accepted me as your disciple. You have reprimanded me. You have taught me a lesson. You have taken me as your disciple, as your servant, and punished me. Now, that is what I want at that. So, the devotee's attitude like that, they're always trying to be the humble servant, never trying to be the enjoyer, always trying to avoid being the enjoyer of the material world and be the humble servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And we see that Advaita Acharya, of course, he was Lord Vishnu himself. Lord Nityananda, he is non-different from Balaram. And similarly, he is always trying to be the humble servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because that position as the servant of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, that position of loving devotional service, even Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who's Krishna himself, he descended to taste that himself. I am the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and I see that my greatest devotee, Srimati Radharani, her loving service to me, she's enjoying millions of times more than I can understand. And the only way I can understand is to relish that position of my devotee, is to actually take the position of the devotee himself. So he became, Krishna became Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So anyway, I'm just talking about that, man. These are some of the aspects of this verse. If anyone has any questions or comments about deities, comments, I'll just read her verse again. Deity said, "It is very good that my sons will be magnanimously killed by the arms of the Personality of Godhead with his Sudarshan weapon. Oh, my husband, may they never be killed by the wrath of the Brahmana devotees." Well, the nails are connected to the arms. There's a song about that. Landowners connected. But the same with the Sudarshan Chakra, that's also. If you're a doctor, you should know that song. Isn't that one of the first songs they teach you when you do medicine? Another one.
Sometimes they say that if you worship Lord Shingdev, then you don't need Krishna. But how is it possible? Because Lord Chaitanya himself gave Lord Shingdev. So, how do you explain? Some people told that if you remember Lord Shingdev, then you go to Lord Shingdev, you don't go to Krishna.
It's a good question. So Mahaprabhu is saying that he's been told, which you do hear, even in the Vaishnava community, that if you're praying for Lord Narasimhadev, you go to his planet. If you worship Varaha, you go to his planet. If you want to worship Krishna, you have to fix your mind upon him. So all of those incarnations of the Lord, they are manifesting some portions of Krishna's qualities. So, Krishna, one of his qualities is that he is very protective of his devotees and very anxious for their welfare. That quality, because Krishna's pastimes are very vast and expansive, to demonstrate that quality particularly, he has the form of Lord Narasimhadev. And that quality of Krishna, is sort of seen, other different qualities are put aside so one can meditate fully on that particular quality. Therefore, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was revealing that he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, he began to manifest different forms to different devotees. Some he manifested his form as Narasimhadev, some he manifested his form as Ram, or the Sadbuja form, some he manifested his form as Varaha. So he manifested great variety of different forms of the Supreme Person of Godhead according to the taste of those different devotees who are all exclusive devotees of Krishna. You see? So it's not quite correct that because, just like when devotees worship the Shalagram, you know, the Krishna Bhaktas, they see them all as Krishna. But although they worship all the Shalagrams as Krishna, he was Krishna, they still worship them according to the particular form that Krishna has taken as Varaha, like that. One time Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he was at his home, he also had a variety of Shalagrams, Varaha, even he was worshipping, and he put them on his lap, and he was saying, these are all my different forms. That I am the Supreme Personality. So he was sitting on the altar where the Lord is worshipped with all the Shalagrams on his lap. These are all my different forms. But he was, you know, acknowledging, this is me, but I appear in different ways. So when, you know, if you worship the Shalagram, you may remember Chaitanya, oh, this is Chaitanya, the Shalagram. I'm thinking of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. When Krishna was living in Dwarka, there was some messages sent between Dwarka and Braja, and the gopis were praying to Krishna. They were feeling great separation from Krishna. They were saying, "You appeared as Varaha, you know, and you delivered the earth. You know, deliver us. Our minds are sunk in this sorrow of separation. You did that as Varaha. Surely you can take us out of this sorrow." So they're acknowledging, you know. So according to particular moods, they may reflect how Krishna has appeared in his various avatar to manifest particularly some quality. You know, there are 64 principal qualities of Krishna, and the various avatars manifest that particularly. So when they're meditating upon Krishna in a particular quality, sometimes they do that through one of his avatars. So they're always thinking of Krishna. So it's a little incorrect to think that you cannot think of Krishna while, you know, in fact, the Srimad Bhagavatam, which is filled with so many pastimes of the various avatars, all of those aspects, all the entire Bhagavatam is to help you remember Krishna. So the pure devotees of the Lord, when they read Srimad Bhagavatam, they're not thinking, when I get to the 10th canto, I'll start thinking of Krishna. In the meantime, I'll just bide my time through, you know, the 3rd canto. They're not thinking like that. They get to the first verse and they're just, tears are just flowing from, you know, Gadadhar Pandit, you would read the Bhagavatam, every syllable reminded him of Krishna. Actually, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was teaching his students grammar, he explained every syllable in relationship to Krishna. Even the alphabet. Now, if you can look at an alphabet, verbal root, and perceive Krishna, how can you not look at Varaha and perceive Krishna? You see? You look at one of the alphabets. Look, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was showing. He explained each and every aspect of grammar in relationship to Krishna. Now, if you can do that and remember Krishna, how is it that someone cannot remember Krishna while reading the pastimes of Lord Ramchandra, Varaha, like this? That doesn't make sense, does it?
You confirmed it. Because I don't read English. I used to be told when Srila Prabhupada was very sick in May 67. Mm-hmm. Very, very sick. Prabhupada, he had a stroke. And no doctor was able to do anything. He was on holiday or something. So Lord Prabhupada said, bring me photo of Narasimhadev.
Yeah.
And chant Lord Narasimhadev prayer and Hare
Krishna. That's right. And also in the very beginning when Prabhupada came to America and he suffered those heart attacks, And he wasn't sure whether he would even make it to USA alive. And that night, Krishna appeared to him in a dream, rowing a boat, Prabhupada says, in all his many forms. I've seen a picture, someone has done a picture of someone. But you see, you know, rowing a boat, so you've got Varaha and Sringadev like this. But Prabhupada understood Krishna and all his many forms, the different avatars, are taking me to safety, and they are all looking after me. It is described that all the incarnations and avatars reside within Krishna. He's not different from all of them, they actually. So, you know, this Sankirtan movement is in fact, you know, under the protection of Krishna, which means that all the various incarnations and avatars, which are part and parcel of Krishna, are also maintaining in various aspects this Sankirtan movement and the devotees. And various devotees, in their relationship with Krishna, the particular qualities may therefore have a particular attraction to certain of Krishna's avatar pastimes that help them to remember Krishna in a very particular way, according to their service. It's actually an intelligent point. And therefore, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says that if someone worships me and is offensive to any living entities, including the demigods, he will not accept that worship. So what to speak of the Vaishnavas? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu includes every living entity, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says because every spirit soul, every living being is actually a manifestation of one of my potencies. So when you become envious of any living entity, critical, offensive, even to the demigods, you are actually being offensive to one of the potencies of Krishna. Therefore, how is it possible that love of God is there within the heart? If you love Krishna, you see everything. Love of God means that you see everything as Krishna's energies and potencies and manifestations. There is Premanjanachari Bhakti Vilakshana. Love of God means that at all times, at all places, you see everything in relationship to Krishna because everything is Krishna's. One of his material or spiritual energies or his personal manifestations. If we are disrespectful to any living entity, we're being disrespectful to Krishna in one of his potencies, and that is a result of not coming to the platform of love of God. So the love of God is not manifest. So, you know, what they're saying is correct. in the Bhagavatam, in the fifth canto, we read that in Jambadvip, there are, and, you know, and Bhumandala, there are other Varshas. And in those Varshas, they worship the sun god, you know, fire, you know, the earth deity. They worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, particularly through one of those representatives, demigod representatives. They're seen, and they're all nice, you know, devotees to some degree or another, but they worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead through a particular demigod. We chant the Gayatri Mantra every, you know, the Brahmanas do three times a day. Who are we worshipping? The sun god. But we're worshipping the Supreme Lord via media the sun god. If we're disrespectful to the sun god, you think, how are we going to chant our Gayatri and worship the Lord? If we disrespect, oh, the sun god, demigod, you know, we don't care about them. You know, we can say what we like about the Sangha. How are we chanting Gayatri? And how are you worshipping? Would that not be possible? So, you know, they are... throughout the Bhagavad Gita, it describes that the devotees, they see the demigods. When you do fire yoga, you worship various demigods who perform particular functions. When you offer grains into the fire, it's Agni who receives them. And from Agni, it goes to Vishnu. But if Agni says, oh, I don't want to give them to Vishnu, you've been offensive. Trouble lighting your fire.
Yeah, Prabhupada is like in all of the purpose, Prabhupada is stressing on not worshipping them, although not being disrespectful, but not having the complete faith in Krishna.
Yeah, we don't worship the Vaishnava doesn't worship the demigods as being independent gods. They see that the demigods are one of the, you know, they are manifestations of the various potencies of the Lord. And therefore, that or they're described as even limbs of the Lord. So when we offer respect or worship to the Lord, sometimes through the via media of a particular demigod, we're actually worshipping one of the limbs of the Lord. See? So, you know, again, if someone massages your feet, you know, you don't complain, oh, you massage my feet. What about massage me? You know, the feet are your limbs. That's how we see them connected. You know, they're actually limbs and they perform various functions on behalf of the Lord in universal management. So we're not disrespectful to the demigods. But the difference is they disrespect the Lord when they worship the demigods. That we don't do. So when we worship the Lord, we don't disrespect the demigods. But what they're doing, which is you have to point out, is they may actually be disrespecting the Lord when they worship the demigods as being independent. That is an offence. See? So in fact, they're the ones. So everyone should be can be respectful to the demigods. I mean, we're respectful to the Prime Minister or the President. You know, if the Prime Minister comes in, Liberal, Labour, we don't care. We offer them respect. We're respectful. And you're doing... the ruler is considered, you know, the representative of the Supreme. So we're not disrespectful. Therefore, there's that verse, Trinad Pisi Nichinatarodhi Sishnapani. You know, one should offer respect to all living entities. And in the verse, I think, is it Gurudev, you know, the verse glorifying the spiritual master, you know, when, you know, I am not offensive or disrespectful to any living entity, at that time, you know, I will be able to chant the holy name. The ability to chant the holy name depends upon our devotional advancement within the heart. And if we're offensive or disrespectful to any living entity, what to speak of Vaishnavas, that ability to chant the holy name of the Lord properly, or for that holy name of the Lord to be accepted by the Lord, that's not there. So, you know, that's throughout our philosophy. So we agree with that. It is contradictory, you know, for us to be claimed to be lovers of the Supreme Lord and disrespectful to anyone, what to speak of demigods. That's actually contradictory. It doesn't make sense. So that's an intelligent question. Anyone else? Sorry. They worship Lord Narayan and Radharani used to go and worship the sun god. You know, they're following, we can learn from the activities of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his associates who performed, devotional activities within this Kali Yuga. We can also see from Krishna's pastimes where they performed devotional activities, according to within the Vedic framework. We can learn a lot of the proper culture from the Krishna book, the Srimad Bhagavatam, and Chaitanya Charitamrita, so that we know how to reciprocate with each other, reciprocate with people who are not devotees, reciprocate with the envious, reciprocate with the every living entity, and also reciprocate with the demigods. Was it England that Prabhupada was having kirtan, and he said Lord Shiva had come and he asked that a asana was placed there permanently for Lord Shiva, and then another time he said Narada Muni. So,
New York.
You had it, he said, you see, Lord Shiva has come. And he wanted an asana placed there permanently. So Prabhupada didn't ask him to leave. We have no place for demigods. Don't look. Look at Lord Shiva's in the corner there. Everyone, quick, out of the temple. Run for your lives. So we learn these things from the books. And I think sometimes that's the problem. The Prabhupada says he would say, if I have one criticism on my disciples, because he loved his disciples, despite all their falsehoods. One criticism, they're not reading my books properly. That's it. So the Prabhupada ki jai.